Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks, Tom Engineering on producing our program on the other side of the glass. Tom, we're on our way to kind of a warm weekend for this time of year, but then we'll get back to maybe like some cool evenings, typically of fall. We are in fall.
That's our only indication of any kind of fall weather is the cooler evenings,
yeah,
in my opinion, anyway.
It's like autumn comes last here. The cottonwood trees turn in December. But 2 months later, it's spring. So we have a very short turnaround season. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, September 23rd, 2022. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, the voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. All of my programs are podcast. They're available at buckmastershow.com. We've got a very extensive archive. We've been doing the radio project for now almost 12 full years, and there are a lot. There's a lot of content there, pretty much every show we've done since January of 2011. The Buckmaster Show live line, and we take our calls, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we do invite folks to call at 790-2040 anytime during the hour. Our media partners want to say a big thank you. We do our Friday thank you shout out to our media friends, Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, Dan Shear, a great supporter of our work at Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Felipe Garcia is with me in studio. Felipe, a visit Tucson, where he is the president and CEO of the region's destination marketing organization. He has led in his work at Visit Tucson, Vamos, the Tucson, Mexico marketing effort. He's now the newly elected president of the board of a network of foodies, basically. Delish Network includes some of the world's top cities that are involved in this project. Felipe is just back from one of those cities, really the food capital of France, Lyon. Mm-hmm. France. Good to see you, Felipe.
It's great to be back, even though my mind and stomach is still in France.
There you go. Yes. Other cities, you've got Barcelona, Hong Kong, Buenos Aires, that are all collaborating on developing programs and strategies to use food and gastronomy as tourism and economic development platforms. And that effort dovetails nicely with Tucson's designation as the first American United Nations city of gastronomy. Joining me in studio with Felipe Garcia, Jim Ninsel. Jim spent more than 30 years with the Tucson Weekly, retiring in July as senior editor at Tucson Local Media. How are things going for you, Jim?
Oh, you know, I'm just sitting here watching wheels go round and round.
Not just sitting looking at four walls. You're keeping real busy with the family.
This, that, and the other, for sure.
So, first of all, again, Felipe, welcome to our program. You're a little bit jet-lagged, I'm sure. You were in Turkey at the invitation of, would you call that a media market city in Turkey? What town was that?
So the town is called Gaziantep, and it's south of Turkey, close to the border with
south
Syria.
South of Istanbul?
South of Istanbul. Okay. I was 20 minutes from the border with Syria.
Wow.
And a phenomenal city, 1.7 million people. Population, mm-hmm. but they have right now about 600,000 refugees from Syria that have arrived. Mm-hmm. But something that's fascinating, I was expecting it to be camps or something. No, they're building apartments. They're part of the community.
Are they assimilating these people?
So mm-hmm. we as outsiders, yeah. we were like, where are they? Locals, they say, we know where they are.
Yeah.
So many have getting jobs in different manufacturing industries. So it's been fascinating to see what's happening in that community.
And then Lyon, part of this network, now they've made you the president of the board of this. How big a deal is this?
It's, you know, something, it's huge. Just to look into the sense that, imagine being in the table where you have Barcelona, Madrid, Buenos Aires, Brussels, all these amazing food capitals that yeah. we know around the world, and that all of a sudden, all of them, they started calling Felipe Garcia in Tucson and said,
yeah,
and hey.
Suddenly Tucson, Arizona has a seat at the table with these big boys?
So not only that, they say, we want you as part of the board, but then later on, we want for you to be the president. I mean, they're never had a non-European president.
Wow.
So this is shaking a little things. We had a strategic planning session for 2 days in Lyon, and we're going to make some very good changes. And I was happy to see that people from Lyon, from Belgium, they're excited to see the perspective that we're bringing to this organization.
Okay, Jim Nitzel.
You weren't able to get to the Queen's funeral.
No, I was not. I missed
that. Yeah. Talk about food and the importance and the emergence, really, of Tucson's foodie designation. It's a city of gastronomy designation, and how that has affected tourism in Tucson.
It's been a great game changer to our community. Now, what's fascinating is that I still remember the day that we were designated or we received notification from UNESCO that we were a creative city of gastronomy.
When was it, 2017?
It was 17. I remember it was December.
Right. So it's been about 5 years.
Exactly.
Okay. And that was something I'd been worked for some time.
We had applied. We were denied the first time. They say, no, you need to modify your application. These are the things that we want to see. We went back and apply, and they say yes. And I remember that I was at the mayor's office. He had a press conference. He asked me to bring some banners from my office, so I carry the banners from my office. And this is December, and of course, sun goes down early, and I'm walking back, and it's dark. And I went from this stage of excitement to walking to my office saying, oh, my God, what have we done?
Yeah, well, how are we going to live up to this?
Exactly. Yeah. That's very, very big. But I think that what to me struck me is that nothing changed at night. It was not like a franchise for a food chain that you get all the ingredients and here's your box and now start cooking.
Yeah.
We were the same the following day, but finally we were acknowledged of the food, gastronomy, history, culture was happening in our community. Now, the first part was, how do we let people know what's UNESCO? What does it mean to be a city of gastronomy? The first reaction, people like, oh, your restaurants. Well, the restaurants are part of it. But it has to do, again, how we're using food, what are we doing with it, the history of it, the agriculture in our community, the different groups involved, the number of local restaurants that we have here in Tucson. So that has helped us change completely the perspective and have people all of a sudden looking at Tucson and saying this is helping us validate something that we already knew was happening in Tucson. So media started looking at town. Till this day, I can tell you, the last month, we have hosted journalists from Mexico, Germany, France, from Canada, that are all fascinated and
they're
still
coming
come here.
Because of the food angle.
That's one of the main reasons.
That's one of the hooks, right?
One of the hooks is the food. They're fascinated about the history, the culture that we have. They cannot understand because the perception is that's a desert. But once they get here, well, it's a living desert, and there's farming, and actually it's been agriculture for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And we had ingredients that have been here for 4,000 years, like corn, new ingredients like wheat brought here to our community. So I think that's helping, and that's driving also tourists to come here to our community.
We've always sold culture. That's been one of the things. But golf has always, you know, been the two cornerstones were always like, we'll sell the golf and the resorts, and then that would be the third, the weather, and then the Western culture kind of cowboy thing. So the culture plays in with the food for
sure. Absolutely. They're both together, as you mentioned, Bill, and that connection between those ancestral ingredients and how tribes like the Tohonoram, they have been harvesting and farming and even developing like the 60-day corn. Who knew that they realized 2,000 years ago that we had a rainy season called the monsoons, and there was an opportunity to plant and harvest in 60 days a variety of corn, not modified genetically in lab. It was done by history, culture, and tradition in our community. So those things, again, they're fascinating to look. And again, local restaurants, seeing our local restaurants. We're in the U.S. When you look at cities of about 1 million population, we're the city that has the largest percentage of locally owned restaurants.
Really?
That's great news.
Wow.
I think at one point we were like a little upset when a chain will close in Tucson and it was like a downer. Now, okay, it closed. It's sad, it's jobs, it's good, but we know that we have great food experiences here in Tucson.
And it seems like, you know, you've always been known for Mexican food, mm-hmm. but it really is far broader than that.
It is. And Jim, going back to the Mexican food, that's something that to me was eye-opening one day, because I had this very, and I'm from Mexico originally, and I found this very, it was like, are we doing cultural appropriation? Because I'm in the U.S. and I'm talking about Mexican food.
Yeah.
So one day, Patty Hines from Patty's Mexican Table, she was here in town filming for her TV show. And I told Patty, says, Patty, I mean, I love Mexican food we have here, but am I stepping out of boundaries trying to promote Mexican food? I know that in the U.K., people in London say that the best Indian food that you can taste is in London, not in India. I'm doing the same in the U.S. And Patty says, Felipe, this was Mexico for thousands of years, and the culture, the history, the ingredients, the people, yeah. many of these recipes, maybe they were developed when this was still Mexico. So no, you're not doing any kind of appropriation, and your Mexican food, it's amazing. And that's when I said, you know something, that's right. We should be proud of our gastronomy, of Mexican food, but also it's great to see many people opening restaurants from other parts of the world that are outstanding here as well. So that representation of multiple cultures, and the best way many times to understand the culture is through food.
Yeah, we may be the birthplace of the chimichanga.
Exactly. We'll claim we are. Yes, we are. And I tell Ray Flores and the Flores family, thank you for bringing that to our world.
And restaurants are driving the resurgence with downtown.
Absolutely. I mean, the downtown, where we're seeing the number of restaurants coming in, there's been changes as well in the restaurant scene. But that's helping us bring new perspective, new eyes, new opportunities. And there's more restaurants coming up. I know in Congress Street, there's going to be a couple of new ones popping up in the next few months. And what I like about this compression we have, or density, it's a good way to try different food in one night. I encourage people, and I've done it in other places, not do bar hopping, but do restaurant hopping. Go to 3-4 restaurants and order an appetizer on each one of them, mm-hmm. and you can try different food in 4 different places. Just walk around.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about food right now, Felipe, because we're going to take our break. When we come back, I want to talk to Felipe Garcia about how we market now to Mexico, an area he's very familiar with, because things have really changed, how the pandemic has really affected tourism. That will be our topic with Felipe Garcia and Jim Nintzel. But right now, Jim, you know what I want to talk about.
Could it be Mona's?
Mona's Danish Bakery. Felipe, I don't know if you've been up there to Mona's. Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle. I love bakery goods. Sometimes my waistline is, you know. Anyway, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, they're open right now for lunch. They do a great breakfast up at Mona's, 6:30 to 3 in the afternoon, Tuesday through Saturday, and their hours 7 to 2 on Sunday. They're closed Monday. Mona'sDanishBakery.com, the website, will tempt you with all those wonderful pictures of everything on the menu, but you'll really be tempted, and you'll have a big decision once you walk in and figure out, what do I want from the bakery case? There'll be some all sorts of wonderful European-style breads and pastries. We'll be right back with Felipe Garcia from Visit Tucson and Jim Nintzel, longtime Tucson journalist, right after we take the break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. Every Friday, we bring in a newsmaker, and the newsmaker today is Felipe Garcia. He is the president and CEO of our region's destination marketing organization, which is called Visit Tucson. In my 34 years here in town, Felipe, there's been different names, different marketing for our marketing of our tourism business. Let me see, Visit Tucson, that came about, I want to guess, maybe 6 years ago, or has it been longer already?
It is longer. I think it's about eight and a half. Yes.
Yeah. How has that worked out?
I think it's perfect. So our legal name still is the Metropolitan Tucson Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Which that was the name for years.
For years. But again, what we do is it's Visit Tucson.
Yeah.
So that became our DBA, or doing business as. But it's been great just to, it's easier and simpler. And yeah. I stopped receiving calls of people asking me for tickets for Disney on Ice because they thought that I was a convention center with the name. So that's been the positive side.
Okay, pandemic. How are we doing in terms of the numbers to pre-pandemic tourism levels in Tucson?
Very well. So a couple of things. The benchmark year that we're using, it's 2019. That was a record year for tourism, and we feel that's kind of where we have to measure. 2020, of course, with pandemic, we should not be measuring. It's good just to see where we were, but
it was really only 3 months of 2020 before the bottom fell out.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're measuring the 2019 numbers. Okay. And when we look at hotel occupancy, so how many rooms have we sold during the year against 2019, we're almost there. I think we're like 3% down of 2019, that was a record year. So that's really nice. But there's two factors to look into that are fascinating. Number one, we have close to 1,000 more hotel rooms in Tucson right now than we have in 2019.
Are you kidding?
Yes, it's fascinating to see the inventory that has been built during the pandemic even. Downtown, we have several properties going into market. By the freeway, we have a few hotels as well. We're seeing new products, and still there's others coming. As you know, there's an hotel coming on River and Campbell up north. Downtown, still we have at the One South Church. It's going to be a Marriott property.
And Jim Nensel remembers, I'm sure, because I remember when we were struggling, right, Jim, to get a downtown kind of signature hotel.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
That wasn't no, that there, long ago. I don't know, maybe 15 years ago.
Been quite a renaissance.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So the occupancy were almost there, but what's been fascinating is the average daily rate. So how much we're charging per room. And we're about $22 more than 2019. That was our peak year. So that means that people are willing to spend more money to come to Tucson. And I think it's great in the point that I think we were, and we were talking, Bill, before the show, we were an undervalued destination.
Yeah.
I mean, we were our resorts back
in the day.
It's a
bargain compared to some places. Go to Maui and see what a hotel room will cost you there. Maybe $800 to $1,000 a night. So, I mean, you know, Tucson's a bargain.
We are, and that's why we have to be very happy to see where the rate's going and to see, as an hotel owner and any business, I mean, if you are in Mona's in the bakery, you want to sell a lot of breakfast and Danishes, but to a good price.
Yes.
I mean, she can sell her product at 50 cents, but make no money.
No.
Well, you want to make it the right price.
Of course.
So when you look at occupancy and then you look at the average daily rate, that gives you the magical number that hotels want to hear, the revenue per available room. So for every room that I have, how much money I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're seeing a very nice growth for Tucson and in our region. Actually, the first months of this year, Tucson lead the West Coast of the United States when we look at our competitors. So when we look at what Scottsdale, Phoenix, Austin, Albuquerque LA, San Francisco, Seattle were doing, usually we trail on the bottom. Well, all of a sudden, in January, we're number one.
Wow.
And we've been in the top moving. Now the summer, we're starting to climb back again to the bottom of the list, unfortunately, but we know that that's a seasonality, but we've never been in those first places ever. I mean, we were tracking 20 years of data and we've never found when Tucson was number one.
Wow.
So that was good news for our community.
Jim Nintzel.
Talk a little bit about the arts as a driver of tourism in Southern Arizona.
So when we look at the destination drivers, and we did a fascinating brand development when we changed our name to Visit Tucson, we also went through a brand process. And brand people, we confuse it as a logo and a slogan, and brand is looking at who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I make the case of Starbucks. I mean, the brand of Starbucks is not the siren with the green hat or whatever. The brand of Starbucks is the barista and the coffee shop with like the sofa. Before Starbucks, we went and have the options of black coffee or with cream and decaf, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then Starbucks introduces the triple macchiato with skim milk and the dollop of coconut, whatever. But people go because of that, how they feel.
A lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. Yeah. So when we did the brand, we discovered that Tucson was something different than when we were promoting and selling. Tucson is a place that is very unique, and it's very, and that's when we decided, you know something, we need to sell Tucson to what people are going to love about our community. If you want to go to a place that it's about nightlife and concerts, like, there's other cities. We should not be everything for everyone. So when we talk about the arts, it's part of that ecosystem that we have. It's helping us get people here to come and see that murals, the public art, and getting those experiences when they come to Tucson. So when you mix the art with the gastronomy, with the open spaces, with the sense of place, it's a magical place. And that's what we hear from visitors, like, wow, we had no idea how beautiful Tucson is. That's why when we're looking into the group activity and conventions, if the meeting planner, if the person in charge of doing the convention, they have not been to Tucson, we tell them, if you come here, we'll pay your airfare, we'll pay your lodging, just give us a chance. 70%, 75% will sign a contract because they say, wow, we've heard about Tucson, we've seen your ads, but once we came to the community, it's phenomenal. So I think arts has a very important role to play in helping us build that element of the identity for community.
For years, Tucson marketed to Tucson, this is a great place to come up and do shopping. The pandemic really closed down those gates. So now what do you do?
So shopping was a very good destination driver for the Mexico visitor. They will come here. They'll spend over $1 billion in Tucson, mostly shopping.
Yeah.
But during the pandemic, I mean, the world shifted and people started doing more online shopping and people started modifying their habits. So we had to adapt really, really fast. The first thing we did is we started working with online shopping and telling people from Mexico, of course, we want you to come here and visit the stores. But if you're really wanting to do some online shopping, well, we can help you set up a Tucson address with a zip code here because guess what? Well, you're going to pay sales tax in Tucson rather than somewhere else. So at least we're generating that money. And second, we're working with a company that is helping ship the product to Mexico. So there's people that can buy product from their homes in Mexico. It gets dropped here in Tucson, and then through this third-party company, they'll charge a fee, and it can be delivered down in Hermosillo and Obregón. With this company, one day I went to visit their warehouse, and it was fascinating to see from a little box of custom-made cards to a big jacuzzi that was being shipped out of there. But again, generating sales tax. So with the Mexico market, we have to pivot our marketing initiatives, still talk about the shopping, of course, but going into the food and gastronomy, talking about cultural events, talking about concerts and other things that are happening here in Tucson. And we are seeing that market come back. Actually, CBP, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, shared data with us last week, and we're back to 2019 numbers.
And our airport will truly be an international airport in a couple of weeks, when service begins to six different Canadian cities.
Very excited to see Flair Airlines come to town and have nonstop service to Canada.
Yeah.
To six
cities.
These
are brand new jets, by the way. They're brand new 737s.
It's a very, and when you look at the leadership of this airline, they're bringing, the CEO comes from Europe, where he was running, I think it's Wizz Airline, one of the largest, like, up-and-coming low-fare carriers. Route development is coming from JetBlue. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing this array of experts from around the world to run this airline in Canada, and with very competitive rates. I think that they're shaking a little the market. I know that the traditional carriers in Canada that are looking very close to Flair because the cities that were having nonstops, they have the option to fly right now to the U.S. during the winter for about $800 and change a plane somewhere to $220 round trip.
Yeah.
So we're going to be competing against their sofa
in the winter. Air Canada and the other carrier, WestJet, are really looking at Flair as a big competition. Flair is based out of Edmonton, Alberta, and there'll be a lot of folks in the winter who will want to come down from Alberta in the winter. And there's also one of your destinations is, they call it, it's Fort McMurray, but some say it's like Fort McMoney because Jim and Felipe, that's the center of the oil shale development. Oh. And so we had on the folks from the airport a week or so ago, and some of those flights to Tucson from Fort McMurray already sold out.
And we're seeing people from Fort McMurray. What's fascinating is that they're buying multiple flights. So they're coming like the first week, and then a month later they're coming back
they're
again.
They're bringing a lot of money with them too.
It's an interesting community. I'm going to be there in a few days. Mm-hmm. And to get there, it's fascinating. It's not easy. You have to stop in Calgary. You have to stop in Edmonton. And then you have to take another flight. And people say, well, can you drive? Like, yes, it's about a four-hour drive that right now can be okay. But imagine the middle of the winter with a storm.
No.
So no. I know that they're very excited about being here in the winter, their winter, that it was going to look like their
you
summer.
You don't want to do 4 hours on the ice highway.
No.
What attractions? We've still got, you know, old Tucson is coming back. You got Biosphere 2. What are we playing up now in their role, the attractions?
So I think the attractions have a very interesting role to play because, again, that experience that is very different from the Desert Museum that people, it's fascinating when we tell people we have the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum and they're like, oh, I'm going to be indoor looking at different things. And they're like, no, it's actually outdoor. 90% of the facility is going to be outside.
Mm-hmm.
So the Desert Museum, all Tucson Studios with a new operator, we're very excited because, again, the programs they will bring, the opportunities they can bring to our destination.
Maybe some filmmaking again.
Filmmaking, huh? And that's another very big opportunity for us on the film side with a new tax incentive or the new tax law that we have for the state of Arizona. I think a great opportunity to bring back filming in our community. So attractions, I think they're going to be playing a very important role to offer another thing to do while they're in Tucson for those Canadian visitors, for example. We're happy that they're coming as repeat visitors. They're going to come just once and then they're out for next year. We're seeing the pattern, like in this community for McMurray, of people coming two, three times during the winter.
Jim Nintzel.
How on the topic of attractions, obviously in the old tourism days, I think something like Old Tucson was a bigger draw than it is today. Well, Old Tucson obviously has changed significantly, but what how has marketing in terms of tourism changed? I guess over the decades,
we have to be the beautiful thing about marketing right now in tourism is that we have more data. 20 years ago, we had indicators. How many people landed in Tucson? What was your hotel occupancy? This our museum, how many tickets you sold? And we started then tracking zip codes and trying to figure things out. Now technology is allowing us to be more targeted and precise in how we're telling our story. So a couple of very fascinating systems that we've been using. There's a company called Near. And very likely, if you look at your cell phone right now, you may have 30, 40 apps on your phone that you downloaded and they were free. And when you download it, you scroll to like 40 pages of terms and conditions. And I'm pretty sure that after you read all of them, that we all do, and you accepted them and you say, well, this is a free data. It's like, well, it's free because what you're providing in return is access to data. So this company Near, what is giving us information on, it's where people are actually coming to Tucson. So we've been able to do some geocaching. So for example, the Desert Museum, we were able to take like, looks like a Google map and actually like draw a line, take off the employee parking lot so we don't get local numbers of employees getting there. But every time a visitor or a resident walks into the Desert Museum and their cell phone signal gets pinged by a tower that they're there, we get that data. So now we know zip codes and we know how long people are staying, where they're going, and if they went to the Desert Museum, where they went afterwards. So this information is helping us be more precise in our marketing efforts and talking to those customers and listening to them and reading from them. The second part is that now we can also, through another company called Adara, when again, you're looking at your computer and you see a Tucson ad, before when it was online advertising, we will measure the number of impressions or clicks, how many people click my ad on a banner on a website. Well, through Adara, then we can get information if a person that look at our ad actually purchased an airline ticket to come to Tucson. So now we can be more targeted and more precise. And we're adding this information with a third layer, that is with social media research. There's a company that is helping us look at our social media, not asking surveys, but looking at what people are talking about themselves and looking what they value and what experiences. So all of those elements we're looking into our attractions. Now, the next phase we have to do is we need to keep reinventing in our attractions because consumers are changing and they want different things and different experiences. We have to be up to that. I know that the Desert Museum a few years ago, for example, they put something very simple, Wi-Fi on property. People want to be going to Instagram, taking pictures and sharing them. Well, give them access to do so.
Okay, Jim, anything else on your end?
No.
Okay, Felipe Garcia, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do you anticipate this winter will be the closest to a normal pre-pandemic kind of tourism? It's our prime time for tourism, after all.
We hope so. We know that leisure travel has been very strong, so people going on vacations, that's great. Group activity is still trailing. We're still seeing a little nervousness, hopefully. I mean, we're talking about the stock market today and these 2 days. Hope this doesn't discourage visitors. If we see a shift, we have to pivot and be resilient and move our marketing efforts to maybe another closer drive market like we did during the pandemic. We're going to keep an eye. So hopefully this winter will be kind of a quote-unquote normal year for us.
Yeah, it does seem like the convention business has not recovered in the same way and may never recover business travel-wise. But leisure travel, there's a lot of pent-up demand of people wanting to get and go out and do things.
Revenge tourism. People desperate to travel. They want to go out. Conventions are coming back. We're starting to see for 23, 24 booking activity. So we're happy. But we know that many groups are very nervous still. During the pandemic, many people got a free pass. You cancel your event. That's fine. It was an act of God, the pandemic. Now, if you book your conference and you cancel, you're going to have to pay penalties. So I think that also has many conventions and events still a little cautious, but we're still making sure to bring clients, get them here to our property, and our goals about the number of bookings is still on pace.
All right.
So Tucson is doing good.
Okay, Felipe Garcia, thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to talk with Jim Nintzel in a few minutes, but first we will take our break and be back on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
All right, welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Felipe Garcia, who heads up Visit Tucson. Jim Nintzel with me, longtime Tucson journalist. At least, 32 years with 30, the Tucson Weekly, 30-something.
30-something, boy.
But,
starts to blur.
Anyway, Jim's kind of, well, he's busy with the kids and everything in retirement, but he's keeping busy, let's put it that way, right?
Oh, yeah. There's never a dull moment.
No, and I'm sure you're still
surprisingly,
kind of...
Surprisingly. I don't know how I fit the job in before.
Yeah. But I know you're still watching this election season. And the top of the ticket, the election deniers, kind of surprising, the polling showing how close this is.
Oh, yeah. I would say
every one of the races.
I would say the Republicans are still the favorite to win the governor and the secretary of state. Attorney general, I'm not so sure about. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Mayes has a relatively good shot.
I mean, you could see Tom Horn back as school superintendent.
He's rehabilitating his image right there against Kathy Hoffman, who was the surprise winner in that race. They were counting votes for a good long time before they declared her the winner. But yeah, you know, it's fascinating to see these people who, I believe are divorced from reality.
who do not, the election deniers, the ones who insist that Trump won Arizona in spite of the evidence and in spite of these cyber ninjas doing their hand count and concluding that Biden won by a wider margin. None of it stops them. And the things they make up are extraordinary. In this debate last night, Fincham's talking about some sort of audit stamp or something that was supposed to be at the top of something or other. And it's like nobody understands what he's even talking about. And that's the thing. These folks can make stuff up a lot faster than people in the media, my former colleagues, can get out there and debunk it. Mm-hmm. You know, the lie gets around the world before the truth has its chance to get its boots on.
And think about this. You know, what if these folks lose, some might lose at the top of the ticket. They will not accept the results.
Exactly. They'll say no there was fraud. I mean, that's one of the craziest things. Everyone says, you know, the Maricopa County vote was rigged, and if that was the case, why did Adrian Fontes, who's now running for Secretary mm-hmm. of State, why did he lose his race? Yes. If this was rigged, why did he not rig it for himself?
Yeah.
You know, it none of it makes sense. And I was talking to someone casually in a conversation who used to be a high-ranking Republican official in the state, and he was telling me, "Oh yeah, we know how they did it. It was there were 200,000 ballots that were the signatures didn't match on the early ballots." And I said, "Okay, so who cast these 200,000 ballots, if not the actual voters?" And he said, the Democratic operatives. And I'm like, well, how did the Democratic operatives get 200,000 ballots to cast? He says, well, people move and the ballots are still sent to their homes. And then you're like, well, then how did the Democrats know which home to go to in order to get the, and then he's like, well, it wasn't really that. It was that they were registering people who hadn't registered to vote before, and then they'd show up and they'd give them a six pack and they'd get their ballot from them. And I was well, then why didn't they have them sign the ballot when they were giving them the six pack? I mean, none of it makes sense. And this is, and the problem is there's so many people who will just buy into this stuff mm-hmm. and will just say, oh yeah, of course it was the 200,000 ballot signatures that didn't match, which, you know, I'm not even saying there were 200,000. I'm saying this is what they say happened. And you just, the mind reels at the ability of people to be able to tell these falsehoods and to be able to peddle them and still be considered legitimate candidates.
Seemingly, Mark Kelly would be in the driver's seat, but that some of the polling show that Blake Masters is coming on. This could be a very close race too.
There's some crazy poll. I mean, some of the polls show Mark Kelly up by double digits, and some of them show neck and neck race. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's another problem is the polling is very, you know, how accurate is the polling these days? And mm-hmm. I think that's becoming increasingly challenging for pollsters. They have to call more and more people to get someone to actually do a poll. There's a lot more stuff that they're doing, via text and via online surveys and things like that. And how accurate are those? And we're going to find out, obviously, in a few weeks. But I think I've said this on your show before, but I think there are two competing political laws at work here. And one is that the party in the White House in challenging economic times with an unpopular president tends to lose elections on the statewide level, the national level. And the other one is that if you nominate people who are too far to one side or the other, you lose the independent voters.
Right.
And the independent voters come home. Or they'll come home, but they tend to go with somebody who's less radical. And we'll see which of those, you know, prevail in November. But I think in the case of Mark Kelly, you've seen he's such a fundraising machine.
Right.
And Blake Masters has given him so much to work with comments about the military being incompetent and comments about the election being stolen and his abortion comments, which, you know, he's obviously tried to pivot and walk back. And they are running ads that just say, this is what the guy says, and they can show him talking in his own words. And they're pretty radical positions, and I don't think he's an especially likable candidate. He doesn't have a lot of charisma, and so I think he's struggling. You're seeing it with the fight over who will pay for his ads, whether the Mitch McConnell is going to throw in or not, and so I think there's some skepticism on his front. But you know, elsewhere, I think the statewide, the governor's seat, the secretary of state who manages the elections, and you know, the notion we're putting an election denier in charge of that is just mind-boggling to me. And the attorney general's race with you know, this young guy who's also an election denier, but their strategies are working on the campaign trail.
And the economy is just really going to hurt and is hurting Democrats.
It is.
I mean, you look at what's happening on Wall Street today, just another disaster. The market's testing. I think it's actually plowed through the lows of the year that we hit in June. I mean, this does not help the Democratic cause.
Not at all. I mean, you know, it's if you're younger and you can, you know, afford to go out and buy some stock, it's probably a great time. Oh, it's a buying
definitely.
Opportunity. You know, you want to buy low.
If I was 30 years younger, I'd be buying.
Yeah, exactly.
Me, yeah.
But when you're older and you're looking at your retirement savings, and the older folks are the ones who vote, they obviously.
And they're seeing maybe a third of it just diminish.
Yeah, it's super challenging.
I mean, it is on paper, but if they, you know, if they're not selling, they haven't really lost anything yet. But if they had to sell, you know, they have lost. If they have to sell,
the market is a long-term game, but sometimes you don't have that long-term to wait it out.
Okay, Jim Nintzel, always a pleasure. We'll touch base with you soon. Thanks, Jim.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Bill.
All right, we're going to pause right here. We've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
And that bump music signals the start of the weekend here on the Buckmaster Show Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. So much to do, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Find out all about what's going on over there by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. 81 degrees over in Silver City. Beautiful early autumn day in New Mexico. Let's welcome award-winning Tucson publicist, food and beverage writer, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great, but you had me at 81 degrees in Silver City. The feeling of fall just a couple hours away. I love it.
I know. Those cottonwood trees are starting to turn over there, and the high country in New Mexico is just very, very tempting this time of year. And, of course, this time of year signals Oktoberfest.
Well, it sure does. And as we talked about last week here on Weekend Watch, the Oktoberfest celebrations don't wait until October. And this weekend's example is some fun planned tomorrow at Union Public House in St. Philip's Plaza. So starting at 5 p.m., it's an Oktoberfest party with free admission. Now, you're going to have specials on Sam Adams Oktoberfest beers, $6 brats, lots of games with some great prizes, some live music, a Stein-holding contest, but the best part, Bill Buckmaster, a brat-eating contest that has my name all over it. So you can check out the full schedule at UnionTucson.com and get ready for some fall fun.
You know, for those that like to belly up to the bar, there is a wine bar that sounds like it's got some tempting offerings this weekend.
Indeed. And, you know, school is in session on Sunday at Revel Wine Bar. They're at 416 East 9th Street. They're going to be hosting another Sunday school wine program from 3 to 4 p.m. Now, this weekend's theme is rosé, and you'll have the opportunity to enjoy four spectacular rosés, kind of ranging from the classic Provence style to modern California. They're going to have both sparkling and still wines. Now, what I love about Sunday school is that they blend a little wine education with the tastings, which makes it really a delicious and informative way to spend a Sunday afternoon. And tuition is only $15 a person, so don't cut class this Sunday afternoon. It's Sunday school at Revel.
And our final offering from Weekend Watch has bacon in it, which means you're going to be there.
What gave you that idea, Bill? Well, if you're a fan of bacon like I am, along with some beer and live blues music perhaps, you can join more than 10 Tucson Originals restaurants on Sunday at Brother John's Beer, Bourbon, and Barbecue on Stone for the return of Bacon, Blues, and Brews. Now, you're going to be treated to delicious salty and sweet and savory bacon plates, live blues, local craft beer from Fire Truck Brewing, and you can even cast your vote for your favorite bacon dish. So doors open at 11:30 a.m. Tickets are just $45 in advance online at Eventbrite and $55 at the door. Bacon, Blues, and Brews sounds like the perfect Buckmaster bundle.
There you go. And a quick note for those, and I hope you were listening to Felipe Garcia from Visit Tucson, talking about Tucson per capita may have more locally owned restaurants than any other city its size. And we were talking with Felipe Garcia of Visit Tucson earlier in the show about how the renaissance of downtown certainly is being driven by these locally owned restaurateurs.
It absolutely is. It really is the heartbeat of the local culinary scene, and the nation now is taking notice. We talked about the fact that Bata, the restaurant down there on Toole Avenue, they were just named as one of the 50 top restaurants in the country in Bon Appetit magazine. So it's not just us Tucsonans loving our local independent restaurant scene, we are definitely helping to put Tucson on the national map, and it makes me so proud in being someone who covers the scene as well as doing my fair amount of eating around that scene.
Matt Russell, have a great weekend. Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophon. Thanks to my assistant, Rose Brandt, making sure all the podcasts are up in a timely manner. Everybody here at KVOI, including my longtime engineer producer, Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. Be well, everybody. Stay safe, and I hope you have a lovely weekend.